Log Talk Radio.
I hope.
Oh, cool music and everything. Well, it's our very, very last show, and
don't blow it yet.
It's our very, very last show. We all hate each other. April Fools. No. Actually, appropriately enough, it's the return of someone you guys like a whole lot. And it ain't me. Dale Sage here from Spook Show. Here along with...
The barely warbling Gar the Ghoul. Blay, blay it to you all.
And
calling from the internet is playing practical jokes on me today. Day Bigley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. Oh my goodness, this is definitely April Fool's Day. That's all I gotta say.
Yep, and the beloved good old Bob and CW are live in the chat with us right now, and who knows who's gonna join us later as we celebrate this auspicious occasion by welcoming back our dear friend. Oddly, it's on April 1st. Is there a connection?
Only the fools know.
He's no one's fool, I tell you. Gar the Ghoul.
Well,
no one in particular,
you gotta
anyway.
Pay for me. You got to pay for me to be your fool. That's how that works.
Yes. Fool for a fee. I like that. That would make a nice business card.
Yeah.
Fool for a fee.
And a bumper sticker and a T-shirt.
I would wear one of those little jester costumes for a day for money. Heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got those little jingle bells.
You get paid to do that?
Yeah.
I need
a legs for it.
I need a fool costume. But we've got, and we're not fooling when we say we got some great radio for you tonight.
We do, yes, we do. Tales from the Damon Runyon Theater and from the Suspense and from Let George Do It.
Yes, Let George Do It, for gosh sakes.
Which is our wonderful friend, Mr. Bob Bailey.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
My favorite Johnny Dollar.
And he was the Green Hornet, too.
Well, only every other Tuesday on the Thursday broadcast.
and
we have that song about him. Won't you come home, Bob Bailey? Won't you come home?
Won't you come home? He was a Green Hornet every April 1st.
Maybe that was Bill Bailey. I don't know.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. You had to put that one on his bill. Yeah.
Yep. Got an April Fool's joke for you.
I can barely win. My internet.
Right.
Michael Myers is dragging his victim off into the deep, dark, scary woods. And then when he gets to a clearing, the victim looks up at Michael Myers and says, "I'm really scared." Michael Myers takes off his mask and says, "You're scared. I got to come out of these woods alone."
There you go.
Hey, we'll give it to you. I'll try to be timely. I might need another cup of coffee, though, but yeah, okay.
I should have set myself up with a sound effect for that, but...
But we'll that's why I'm here.
That's right. To save the day. Thank you. We've been boingless too long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Too long.
Where'd my chicken go? I don't know.
We are glad you
Cuckoo
are in recovery.
It ain't over yet, but I'm here. Howie Scream. I know, yeah. Where's the, we need the Wilhelm Scream and the goat, I guess. That is not on my little noise clanker.
There we go.
Did someone tell us maybe it was CW that if you slowed that way down, that would sound like a TIE fighter? Think about it.
Yes.
If you slowed it way down.
Yeah.
Maybe that's.
Exactly.
Yeah. It sounds like a touchdown.
Really, maybe that's exactly the sound of it.
It could be.
And Lucas has been fooling us for all these years.
I've never fought over a tie in my life. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a Star Wars thing, man. It's a Star Wars thing.
Yeah,
April Fools, you're going to get a lot of this business.
All right. What is that?
We may actually get to some radio.
Nah. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's a 2-hour show tonight, I think.
Oh, I don't know why that came up, but there's this one odd thing. I don't know if it actually came out of a movie or if it was just a sound bite that someone made. But it's like, what was it? The lady says, vibrator repair? And Friday says, no, ma'am, Los Angeles Police Department. It's like, what?
Same thing.
Hello. All right.
Hello.
The Howie Scream, also known as the Howie Long Scream or Screams 3, Man Gut-Wrenching Scream, and Fall Into Distance, is a frequently used film and television stock sound effect for a scream, believed to have originated in 1980 as a sound effect in the movie The Ninth Configuration. So, no, it would not be a TIE Fighter. Wait a minute.
Maybe someone took the TIE Fighter and sped it up. Because the TIE Fighter would have been 77.
No,
someone
they're saying
it's
similar
it
here, but that is not the source of the TIE Fighter screen.
Wow. Darn
so
those
there.
People.
Thank you, CW, for that link. That was cool.
There you go.
Read on.
It says read on, Dale. Read on.
If I must, it has been used in video games such as Half-Life 2 and a faster version called the Fast Zombie Yell. And Modern Warfare is a rank-up sound effect. Ooh. Plus in StarCraft. So appearances, okay, that this sound effect has had. The Ninth Configuration, Betrayal at Krondor, Beethoven Second, Last Action Hero, Serial Mom, Real Monsters. In the theme song, you hear the scream echoing. The Basketball Diaries, Star Wars, Dark Forces. Mm-hmm. The Lion King's Timon and Pumbaa. The Schnookums and Meek Funny Cartoon Show. Good God, I can't believe there was such a thing. Broken Arrow, the movie, uttered by actor Howie Long, whom the scream is named for. Meriden 59, Face Off, The Relic, Crash Bandicoot, Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back. Who Am I? StarCraft. Teaching Mrs. Tingle, and a plethora of others who I'm sure you've heard of and watched multiple times.
It didn't mention that one. It was a special. Came out. It was like 20 minutes long. Barney the Dinosaur Takes Up Jogging.
Oh, yeah. That was back in.
Yeah.
It was a silent one.
Yeah, it was silent except for that scream. Where
wow,
it ripped his pants.
There's two gays here.
Hi, babe.
And one of them is echoing. There we go.
Hello,
echoing.
Babe.
Okay, let's do this.
Now we're down to one Dave.
Now there's one Dave. Now is there echo?
No.
Gar on echo.
Can you hear me now?
That's a
I should have yelled.
I always carry my echo around just in case I want to scare somebody.
True.
My
personal opinion is we should begin with Let's George Do It.
Okay, let him.
You can do that.
A little tale called Mayhem by Experts.
Yeah, don't leave your mayhem up to amateurs. It's not good.
No.
That,
he does a good job on the commercials, though.
Yes.
Racing.
I'm racing. Okay, here we go. Okay. Let George do it. And there it is.
It is
January 31st, 1949.
It is episode number 125.
Part one.
Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Mayhem by Experts, another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice, changes my stock and trade. If you're coming up for the third time and need somebody's help, call on me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Dear Mr. Valentine, I know the exact time of your morning mail. I've checked on that. You'll have a very short time to get to me and keep me from being murdered. Believe me, I have very good reason to be terrified. I can't think of anyone else to help me.
Anyone else to help me, and I'll do my best to make it worth your while. Be sure to come alone. Otherwise, there's nothing you can do for me. And it's signed Madge Damon.
Uh-huh. Well, we've gotten a few cockeyed letters, Brooksy, but this one belongs in a showcase. We got a deadline, no less.
But suppose the mailman decided to stop off at the drugstore for a cup of coffee?
Well, this man seems to have unwavering faith in our postal service. Here, let me see that letter. 426 Duane Street.
George, that's a full half hour's drive from here.
If you make every light. Sit tight, Angel. I'm going to find out what this is all about. Abrams 3C, Murphy 2D. Oh, here we are, Damon. Come on, lady, answer, will you?
No use trying the hall phone, mister.
What?
Ain't been working for years. Being a janitor, I ought to know. Maybe I ought to think about fixing it one of these days.
Yeah, well, don't work too hard, Buster. I want to get to 4C. Where's the elevator?
Over there. But may as well warn you, young fella, can't work in.
Huh?
Another thing I ought to get around to fixing one of these days.
Okay, I'll walk. I'm in a hurry.
Something fierce the way work piles up on a man's back.
Mr. Wet floor.
Oh.
And watch out for the pail.
Oh, I'm sorry to step over you, Mother. Which way is 4C?
Oh, Miss Damon, hide down a few doors. But it ain't going to do you any good. She just left.
What's that?
Just left, bags and all. There was a dark, tough-looking fella going out with her.
She didn't happen to mention where she was going, did she?
Oh, look out, mister. You don't get slopped with the mop.
Oh, okay, Mother, okay. But I asked you a question, remember?
Well, come to think of it, I do happen to remember she said she was going to Union Station. She looked mighty like she was crying.
Well, tell me something else. What does this Miss Damon look like? What's she wearing?
Oh, she's blonde, in a dark sort of way. Short, but not one of them real short kind, mind you. She's,
Great.
Well, she was wearing one of them big floppy hats. Oh, she can get away with them, too, because, like I said, she's short, but not too short.
Yeah, well, thanks very much. Now I can pick her right out of a crowd.
Oh, Miss Brooks, this is wonderful, wonderful. Valentine called you from the Union Station, huh? Oh, brother, that means he didn't catch wine.
If you'll stop splitting your sides for a minute, Lieutenant Riley, I'd like to know what this is all about.
Well, there's no such woman as Madge Damon. I dictated that letter to my secretary.
You certainly can be funny.
Sure.
What's so brilliant about a stunt like that?
Well, he didn't even recognize Sergeant Williams dressed up as a janitor or policewoman Ferris scrubbing the floors. And I know he's seen them both around headquarters at least a dozen times. Oh, brother. Oh, that's your big sleuth for you.
All right, you're a jester and your life is complete. Why don't you give me a hot foot? I won't look.
Oh, look, you don't get it. All this was merely incidental. I had to get Valentine out of the office this morning. Oh, but wait, honey, wait till you hear my real payoff.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to slay me.
All right, Miss Brooks, what day is it?
Day?
Well, it's Monday.
I knew it. I knew it. You forgot. You forgot just as he did.
Forgot what?
It's Valentine's birthday. I checked on it just to make sure.
Oh, no. Oh, it can't be. Oh, I've got to get out of here and get him a present. Where's my coat?
Relax, honey. Relax, relax. This time it's yours truly who's giving Valentine a present.
Yeah, how sweet.
Yes, sir. Look here. Here in this box.
A birthday cake.
Yes, sir. And in just a few minutes, five top-notch mystery writers, all big shots in the field, are going to be here to attend Valentine's surprise birthday party.
Mystery writers? Lieutenant, you sound like you're running a fever.
No. I've done them favors in the past, and they're just dying to come along for the fun.
After what you did this morning, I'm suspicious of what you consider fun.
Ah, come on now. Come on, where's your sense of humor? Look, we're going to stage a phony murder, see?
With you as a victim.
And I'm betting Valentine is going to fall for it hook, line, and sinker.
Pardon me while I laugh.
Yes, sir. Look, you see, I'm going to examine the supposed victim and announce that he's dead. And I could just see Valentine going into action without even checking, without even bothering to find out if there's really been a crime. And in front of all those writers, too. Oh, boy.
I'm not going to let you do
it. What? Oh, now, come on, be reasonable. Valentine's put me on a few spots where I didn't look too bright. I need this for my morale. I'll tell you what. I'll make you a bet.
What kind of a bet?
Well, a hat for you if I lose and a box of cigars for me if I win.
All right. Okay, Lieutenant, you're on.
Okay. Ha-ha! Now we got work to do. Miss Brooks, I want you to meet Steve Barry. He writes all those hard-boiled detective novels about Dan Flynn, Private Eye.
You mean you write those books about Dan Flynn?
Young lady, one doesn't have to look like a thug to understand the psychology of a tough, two-fisted character.
And this is Cornelia Wollaston, who writes such wonderful, blood-curdling horror stories.
Yes. You should see some of the people I meet in my nightmares. Gruesome. When do the festivities begin, Lieutenant?
Well, Valentine is still probably wandering around Union Station, so let's get on with the introductions, huh? This is Ben Forrester, Miss Brooks. He's of the deductive school. He's here to play corpse today.
I'll make the liveliest one you ever saw. Don't you think so, Miss Brooks?
In your profession, you should at least know what a corpse looks like.
This is Sigmund Greenmetz. He specializes in scientific crime. Why, he spends more time in our police lab than we do.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I admit the thoroughness, even though some of my colleagues don't.
Nothing like being thorough about mayhem.
And this is, finally, young Mr. Copeland, who believes that every crime has a psychological basis.
And that's the way it will always be, as long as crimes are committed by human beings.
I don't mind suspense, Lieutenant, but I happen to have a dinner party.
Yes, where is Mr. Valentine?
Well, he'll be along any minute now, Barry. Oh, now, look here, Greenmetz. You know what you have to do.
Yes, I understand it. I pull down the window blind to darken the office like this. Then I turn on the light.
Right.
Then when Mr. Valentine begins to light the candles on his birthday cake, I flip the lights off.
And with a pathetic, stifled scream, I crumple to the floor.
Oh, dear. Murder can be so repetitious, even when you state it.
just one minute and one more thing, Greenmetz.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Forster.
Don't poison Valentine's cake with one of those exotic venoms you always fall back on in those incredibly dull stories of yours.
I may seem a little out of date to a successful best-selling writer like you, but at least I use careful research. I'm not a fraudulent writer.
Gentlemen, remember, this is supposed to be a party.
Yeah, cut it out, Greenmetz.
I don't like people to laugh at my work. If you go through the annals of crime, you'll discover that poison has been used more often.
Quiet, everybody. I think I just heard Valentine come in the outside office.
I still think I'm going to win that hat.
Hey, Brooksy. You know that letter I got this morning?
Where did you find Madge Damon?
Hey, Brooksy, what is this? Who are all these people?
Oh, they're guests, darling. Your birthday guests.
What?
As a matter of fact, they're all well-known mystery writers.
Well, never mind. Never mind, pal. You'll get to know them all later. But tell me something. Tell me, What about the janitor and the scrub woman?
Oh.
Didn't you recognize Williams and Mrs. Ferris, huh?
Lieutenant, I gotta hand it to you. You had me coming and going.
No hard feelings, huh? Look here. Look, I provided a cake and some refreshments, so come on, let's celebrate.
Okay, I'm just in the mood.
Go on, George, light the cake.
Off with the light, Streamer.
Very well.
Oh, this is nice and cozy.
Say, I don't even have a match.
Here, use my lighter.
That's the idea, Williston. Hurry up, Valentine.
No, you don't. Get away from me.
What was that?
Huh?
What happened?
It sounded like Forrester.
What's going on here?
Hey, you, Green Mets, get those lights on.
Forrester! Well, what's the matter with him? Why is he lying there like that?
Don't stand there, Barry. Help him up.
Somebody better get a doctor.
Wait a minute. Don't touch him. Let me have a look at him.
Oh. We'd better get the coroner.
What?
This man's dead. Hmm? Lying on his face with a dagger in his chest.
Dead? What are you talking about?
Who wants to kill Forrester?
What are you saying, Lieutenant?
Well, what's the matter, Valentine? Aren't you interested? This happened in your office.
Oh, I'm quivering like a leaf. I think the only thing that'll calm me down is a piece of cake.
What?
Tell your stooge to get up, Lieutenant. This whole setup is as crooked as a worm in an apple.
Oh, darling, I love you.
Oh, nuts.
I get a new best-laid plans of mice and men.
Your little joke didn't work, Lieutenant.
He was too smart for you.
Yeah, when I get taken for a ride in the morning, I try to smarten up come afternoon.
Well, don't be such a ham, Forrester. Get up.
He always did like holding the center of the stage.
Well, maybe I can shake him out of it. Hey, wait a minute.
Huh? You're not trying to put anything over on me.
I'm not kidding. There's no dagger in Forrester's chest.
Of course there isn't.
Just the same, he's been killed.
What
are you
talking
about?
George, one practical joke is enough.
This is no joke, Brooksy. Right now, Mr. Forrester is very much dead.
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. Meanwhile, let's all go back to school for a minute. Read and write in arithmetic? No, sir. A lesson in motor oil from Mrs. Virgie F. Cotner, who teaches school in Phoenix, Arizona. And here's her statement, quote, "Why, it's just plain logic that a clean engine will run better and longer than a dirty engine. And that's why I prefer RPM to any other motor oil. I know it's cleaning my car's motor while it's lubricating it." Unquote. And folks, that's a lesson worth remembering. For RPM motor oil not only keeps your engine cleaner, it guards against internal rust, fights off corrosion and lacquer. It protects hot spots left bare and exposed to wear by ordinary motor oils. And is there plus and minus about RPM? Yes, the plus is longer mileage, longer engine life, and the minus is fewer repair bills. So, to give your car and your pocketbook a break, get an oil drain and refill with RPM motor oil. Get it at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. You find yourself the victim of a very elaborate and phony birthday joke planned by, of all people, Lieutenant Riley. It might have been fun, except that the man who was supposed to play dead really died. And right in your office. And in front of four top-notch mystery writers. You know one of the four had to murder him. You might call it mayhem by experts. In fact, that's what we do call it.
Valentine, why do these things happen to me?
Well, I don't feel too good either. Like an accessory after the fact or something.
Now, wait a minute. Listen, both of you. Don't let your conscience bother you too much. Forrester's murder was carefully planned.
Yes,
if it didn't happen back there in my office, it would have happened somewhere else.
Well, at least we're pretty sure who did it.
Somehow I still can't believe it was Green Nets. He just doesn't seem to be the type.
Yeah, Angel, I second the motion. But the facts are sure stacked up against him.
I tell you, you could have knocked me over with a feather when the coroner said Forrester was poisoned. Jabbed with a hypodermic needle. And then to find the needle in Greenmet's pocket.
Greenmet said he didn't know how it got there. And with everybody milling around in the dark, anybody could have put it there.
Well, he admitted that Forrester had been needling him for months. telling him all he's been doing for 20 years is rehashing Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, it's just a little too pat, Lieutenant. But I certainly don't have any other answer.
Well, I'm holding Green Metz on suspicion of murder. And I think he's going to turn out to be our man.
Could be, Lieutenant, could be. Hey, Brooksy, we never did get to celebrate my natal day. Suppose we spend it on a treasure hunt. See if you can find the light switch, Angel.
Okay. Well, late Mr. Forrester's apartment has all the standard equipment, including copies of Esquire.
Wait, hold it.
Huh?
A crack a light under the door to the other room.
Well, it'd have to be blind not to see. Who could it be?
That's what we're going to find out. Yeah, somebody's there looking for something he's got to have. He's not missing a trick.
George, the light just went out.
Uh-huh. That's when I go in. Stay where you are, Brooksy.
Okay, but I don't have the light.
Okay, Buster, I can't see you, but I know you're in there. Come on, make with the vocal cords. All right. All right, suit yourself. You're either going to have to jump out of that window or try to get past me. Making up your mind? Well, I don't think you're going to jump, friend, so just stay put while I find the switch and we'll...
No, it's not going to be the window, friend.
Take a punch in the jaw? Let George do it. There you go. That's part one.
This is truly a April Fool's Day for me. I had trouble with my internet, and now as I opened up my 2-liter to get a drink, I'm wearing about a liter of it.
Dave's having that day. But things will get better. You're at your house. Oh, God. I don't know if I made that worse.
let George do it. They mentioned a treasure hunt. And it was odd because I ran across a rather entertaining little quote, and it went like this. Don't dig for treasure. Sell the fools shovels. That's how you get rich.
There you go.
There you go.
That'll work. That is a...
And I bet that for the gold rush of whenever 49 or whenever that was, that there were a bunch of people actually making a treasure by selling picks and shovels and straining gear and all that other stuff.
People are by nature scam artists. They'll find a way to make money.
Well, no, that's the weird thing. Would be if you're in that treasure hunt, some wise guy went, "Hey, shovels."
There you go. Why should I do all the digging? Make some other guy do
right,
it. Right. Let George do it.
Yeah. If you got hit with that urge, you could just go, "Oh, I want to go dig for treasure." Oh, wait a second. I could sell shovels or picks or whatever. And
there you go.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, CW, we're going to find out about glass jaws. The scene is hilarious. Now, in this, we have George, and he's the main detective guy. But George isn't married to the female interest. She's his secretary, right?
Right. As it is usually with those old radio programs, like in Sam Spade, he's got Effie and... So I'm not trying to think whoever else. I guess not all of them had them, but a few did. A few had them.
Yeah, I'm wondering why they were moving away from the wife aspect when, you know, it's kind of a one foot on the floor in the bedroom type scenario with the secretary, it's my whomever.
Wink, wink.
Well,
secretary,
I think it's because
they
want these guys to be single, you see, so that all the women will... Want to
fall at their feet.
I don't know. That would be my thought on that. Because all of those guys are, like even Johnny Dollar, you know, who has an interest in the ladies, isn't married to one, although he has a nice interest, but he never is around enough to make the work. Even your singing detective has the girlfriend there who has lots of money, but doesn't have him quite wrapped up yet, you know.
After year three, go ahead and get him married off, you know.
Ah, Roxy and Mike Hammer, you're right, CW, thank you, thank you.
There you go. Yeah, just something I noticed. It was like, see, today that would be what? That would be improper. That would be incorrect. There would be human resources in on this inner office romance thing. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you can't do that anymore.
HR's worries these days.
Wow. Yeah. True.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
What a wonderful tale. Let's wrap it up. Mayhem by experts. Drama.
Ooh. Oh, I feel like I was baking a cake and stuck my head too far into the oven.
Oh, George, what did I do?
Oh. What did you do? Oh, don't tell me you put this dent in my skull.
No, I hit him.
Huh?
Yeah. That gentleman lying face down over there by the couch.
Oh, you handled yourself right well, Angel.
Well, he hit you. There wasn't anything I could do except take my shoe off and hit him back. Golly, I hope I didn't hit him too hard.
Well, we'll just see. Let's turn it over.
Well, surprise.
Yeah, a big surprise. It's Barry. Steve Barry. Come on, Barry. You realize your story sounds as phony as a dime store engagement ring.
I know. It's the truth, Valentine.
I've heard of people doing things for publicity, but not anything like this.
Now, please, try to understand my position. There I was in your office, Valentine, at that party, the scene of the murder.
Huh?
Well, now, what would my readers think if I, Dan Flynn's literary father, wasn't able to solve it?
Oh, I can just hear the whole nation going...
Just what were you looking for here in Forrester's apartment?
I don't know. Just like you, any little clue that might prove whether it was or wasn't Green Mets who did it.
Uh-huh. Just any little old clue.
Yes. If I could find the murderer, the sales of my new book might run into millions.
You know, it's just possible somebody might think you killed Forrester, and we're here trying to destroy evidence.
Hey, what about that, Barry?
Me? Kill somebody? Me? Why, I can't even stand the sight of blood. It makes me faint. The story is my public expects from me. All that violence. Well, you just have no idea what a strain it is on me.
Well, Green Mets has his story, and you have yours.
But I've told you, I'm telling the truth, and you've got to believe me.
Well, I'll be able to tell you better about that later. Now go home, Barry. Put a cold compress in your head. And you, Angel, will you join me?
Where now?
Believe it or not, the public library. To read some mysteries.
George, it's getting late. Oh, can't expect to read all those mystery books tonight. What are you looking for, anyway?
Huh? What's all this?
I know the butler did it.
Oh, this might be what we're looking for. Yeah, Brooksy, here are the books by Cornelia Williston and young Copeland. You know what I found in them?
Words. And more words.
Yeah. Also, one particular phrase that keeps bobbing up in both.
Let me guess. Don't touch anything till the police get here.
No, Lucy, no. In the translucent twilight.
Would you mind repeating that?
In the translucent twilight.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said. I just wanted to be sure.
Now, why should a lush phrase like that keep popping up in the books both of them wrote?
So they steal from each other.
Hmm. One more intriguing little fact. Cornelia Wollaston's most successful book, The Twisted Claw, was dedicated to B.G. See? Right here in the frontispiece. To B.G., a kindred spirit with undying love.
B.G.? Look at that brittle Miss Wilson. You'd never think she'd go in for baby talk.
A kindred spirit.
And look at this book, the first one Forrester ever wrote. It wasn't signed Ben Forrester like all the later ones. It was signed B.G. Forrester. B.G.
Do you think...
Maybe it's more than a coincidence, but I'm sending a telegram to Sweetwater, Oklahoma.
Well, you know, darling, it's little streaks of logic like that that endear you to everybody.
The book jacket on the twisted claw says Miss Williston was born in Sweetwater. A telegram to the local paper will bring us a lot of interesting details about Cornelia.
And then?
And then, I may want to pick up my birthday party where it was so violently interrupted with the same list of guests. Except, of course, the late Mr. Forrester. Valentine, what's the reason for this crab break?
Yes, just what have you got on your mind?
Have you found something that will clear this man here? I'm coming to that, Lieutenant.
Come right in, Miss Fullerton. Mr. Copeland.
What, another birthday party so soon?
I just got your message, Lieutenant. I came right over.
If you're all here to tell me how much I despise Forrester, you wouldn't be saying anything that's not true. He was obnoxious, arrogant. But I wouldn't go to the trouble of killing him.
Take it easy, Greenmuts.
Okay, Valentine, okay. What do you know that we should know?
You better get started, Brooksy, before the good lieutenant blows a gasket.
Oh, yeah. Oh, goodbye, George, darling. I shall meet you in the translucent twilight.
Translucent twilight?
Oh, what's the matter, Miss Williston? Those words seem to have a special meaning for you.
There's nothing more beautiful than a translucent twilight, is there?
Say, what's going on here?
What is this?
Wouldn't you say that was a purple phrase, Mr. Copeland? In the translucent twilight?
I wouldn't know.
You should, if you read your own books. Or if at least you read the ones somebody else wrote for you.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, what is all this, huh?
George, do you want all these fine detailed notes you made in the library?
I don't think we'll need them, Brooksy. I believe Miss Williston will admit she wrote all of Copeland's books as well as her own.
Goodness, you can't mean what you're saying.
Well, that can't be. The styles are too different.
That's a lie, Valentine, and you know it.
Ridiculous.
That one phrase keeps recurring often in the books you two have written.
Well, what about it? I told you all writers are crazy. Anyway, it could have been just a coincidence.
Uh-uh, Lieutenant. Authors fall in love with certain phrases and use them over and over again without even realizing it. They become just as much a part of them, just as revealing as their fingerprints.
Come to think of it, you're right, Valentine. You're right. I keep finding my Dan Flynn saying over and over again, I'm going to slam you senseless, sweetheart.
That's absolutely true, yeah. I find myself doing the same thing.
But, Mr. Valentine, I fail to see
Miss Williston,
how...
I received a little information from Sweetwater, Oklahoma.
Is that supposed to terrify me?
You wrote Copeland's books, and for a very good reason. He happens to be your son.
What?
What's that word?
Was it pride that forced you to make a successful writer for your son, Cornelius?
Son? But it's Miss Williston. Miss!
Take it easy, Dad.
No, there was a Mr. Williston at one time. Okay, why don't you admit it, Cornelia? You're a widow. It's all here in this telegram.
All right. What if I am?
You can stop it now, Valentine. Yes, Cornelia is my mother. She wanted to help me in my career. That's nobody else's business.
Okay. So this is going to make headlines in the Saturday Review of Literature. Now, what about it?
Go on, please, Mr. Fallon.
Mrs. Williston, you had a very good reason to kill Forrester, didn't you?
Why, I hardly knew him, except professionally. He was just another writer.
Oh, I see. And is that why you dedicated the Twisted Claw to B.G., and I quote... with undying love.
Forrester's middle initial was G. G for Gerald.
And he was the kind of man who had other women call him B.G. And with the same undying love.
You're right about that, Valentine. Forrester was always bragging about his success with the fair sex. The truth is, I once told him to his very face that he was a cad.
Keep going, Valentine. Let's get to the end of this.
Don't you see, Lieutenant? When Forrester decided he was through with Cornelia, he held a whip hand. The threat to expose the hoax of young Ted Copeland, the promising new writer.
I should never have let you do it, Mother.
So, Cornelia, you killed Forrester, and in a way that would place all the suspicion on Greenmetz. Now, didn't you?
Yes. That's exactly the way it happened.
Thank you, Mr. Valentine. Believe me, Mrs. Williston, I'm very sorry.
Of course you know you're lying, Cornelia.
What's this?
And I have an idea that I won't be the one to prove that.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to say she didn't kill Forrester? She just said so herself.
Thank you for being a practical man, Lieutenant.
No. No, this is one time I'm going to stand on my own 2 feet, Mother.
Ted, keep quiet.
I killed Forrester, just as Valentine described it. But he had it coming to him for such a long, long time.
What are you doing, Ted? You have your whole life
before
you.
It's no use, Cornelia. I'm sorry I had to do it the way I did, but I had a feeling he'd tell the truth if he saw the guilt being placed on you.
I knew how much you loved him, Mother. I saw how he threw you over. All I could do was stand by.
Oh, Ted.
The scandal about the books, it was going to ruin not only me, but you. That's why I killed him.
So you see, Brooksy, Greenmetz would never in a million years think of poisoning anybody when he knows he's an authority in the field.
And you figured it had to be either Cornelia or Ted. But what made you decide it was the son?
Why, Angel, don't you remember? When I was lighting the birthday cake, Cornelia handed me the lighter. She was standing right next to me, yards away from Forrester.
Well, you can keep your genius badge, mister.
Easy, Brooksy, easy. Oh. What are you trying to do, trip over yourself?
Oh, no, it's just this darn heel that isn't there. Incidentally, my fine friend, I'm putting the cost of a new pair of shoes on the office expense account.
Oh, shakedown, eh?
No, girlish superstition. Never knock anybody unconscious twice with the same shoes.
Lots of times in everyday motoring when you need extra go-ahead for your car, but fast. And the way to get that speedy pickup is to get Chevron Supreme gasoline, the gasoline that puts command performance in your car. Thanks to special blending agents, this high-octane fuel gives your car command performance under every road condition. It commands fast starts, commands smooth acceleration, commands the extra power that makes your car great on hills. And no matter where you drive in the West, with Chevron Supreme, you can be sure of command performance. For premium quality, Chevron Supreme is climate-tailored to each different altitude and temperature zone from Canada to Mexico in all the western states. For command performance in your car, get Chevron Supreme tomorrow. Get it at standard stations and independent Chevron gas stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Next week at this time, we pick up George Valentine on an out-of-town assignment, which begins on a train that's just pulling into Sharondale.
Ain't you kind of cold out here on the platform, Jack?
What? Oh, no, I'm getting off as soon as the train stops.
You're getting out here, Jack. Don't make me carve things in your face with this broken bottle. I don't like the sight of blood.
Hey, wait a minute. It's not going to be my blood, Buster.
Get off, Jesse. Get off!
Hey!
Happy landing, Jack! Stay out of Sharondale!
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West. Let George Do It stars Robert Bailey as George, with Francis Robinson as Brooksy. Wally Mayer appears as Lieutenant Riley. Tonight's story was written by David Victor and Herbert Little Jr. and directed by Don Clark. Also heard in the cast were Jeanette Nolan as Cornelia, Roland Morris as Copeland, Junius Matthews as Barry, Fred Howard as Forrester, Louis Van Ruten as Greenmetz, and Ruth Parrott as a scrub woman. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Oh, my goodness.
He's not yours, scrub woman.
Blimey, Master Jake. Yes, what an occupational choice, scrub woman. long last, a real and actual Gar's moral of the story.
You know it's going to be a rough year when your birthday kills you.
That would make it a rough year. Yes, indeed.
And I want you guys to know that from the start of that second part to now, absolutely nothing has happened to me. See, even if I go and I touch this button, nothing's going to happen. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Oh, no!
Run!
Wow. That was a strong button there, Dave.
Yeah, I got us. I should have hit the escape key.
Yeah!
Delayed reaction.
In the last part of that, it said who the scrub. What did they call her? A scrubber woman or something?
The scrub woman. The scrub woman.
Which nodded me towards cleaning woman, which was a hilarious scene in Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid with Steve Martin. Cleaning woman!
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. And he would go into a big rage about cleaning woman! That was so funny. That's one of my favorite films, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. Very unrated, underrated, very hilarious, very noir.
That was early in Steve's career and how he inserted in with his the original film stars and such was amazing.
It was.
I have always wanted to do that with a. It would be so cool if you could get like a bunch of different horror hosts. And create a new movie by editing clips of public domain stuff, you could kind of recreate the Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid idea. Would that not be cool?
Yeah.
Be a lot of work editing, though.
That would be
a lot of editing and writing.
A lot of editing, yeah.
After I saw that film, I just really wanted Rachel Ward to remove a bullet.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so funny.
I can't figure out why dead men don't wear plaid. I can't figure that part out.
They just don't.
I don't know. Just a thing. I don't know what the
who
plaid
wants to wear plaid for all of eternity. Think about it.
Spike Jones.
Okay.
Spike Jones.
Right.
Spike Jones.
Okay.
And the City Slicker.
And every one of
them,
those City Slickers.
Right. Aside from that, I have some plaid around here somewhere. I like plaid, but yeah, it's not very fashionable. You know, not a whole bunch of people are knocking it out of the park these days. But Spike Jones did.
Well,
and used car salesman.
It's funny. Yeah. When you tune into
the old
Tonight shows with Johnny Carson that show on some of these digital channels, and you see him in all these 1970s leisure suits, you say,
yes,
"Oh my God,
yes.
You couldn't wear that today."
No.
It's so
crazy.
You can
wear almost anything today at the same time in some circles.
Right.
Except for a 70s leisure suit, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But we've lived through all of this wild stuff, and to see it now and see how so much of it won't work or it can't be done, it just – yes. CW, WKRP, Herb Tarlick, I think. I don't know what his last name was.
Yes, Herb Tarlick from WKRP.
The sales manager.
Yes.
Yeah. Sales manager, yep.
He just constantly wore those suits like, oh, my gosh. And not just, well, I guess it goes without saying, I don't know if you can wear the plaid blazer without wearing the plaid pants. I'm not sure if that, you know, you have to wear
both. It might not be allowed. I think you actually have to wear the
And then, do you wear a plaid tie with it? I don't know how that works.
But a different pattern plaid.
A different pattern, different color. Yeah,
I remember those crazy tuxes the years we graduated, Dave? The crazy colors they had, like sky blue tuxedo to rent. Everybody rented
them.
Oh, yeah.
Sky blue things, yeah.
They had those when
really
I was around. Yeah.
Hacky.
Yep.
Tacky.
Or red velvet. with a black shirt or something. I don't know. It's just.
Insane.
Packing this doesn't go out of style. It stays there.
Yes.
You know, there's a T-shirt. Tacky never goes out of style. You know. I mean, I've been reading, The House of Mystery or something like that.
Uh-huh. And
on every 13th page of this comic book, it's a wild card. It throws towards something really zany or funny or hilarious. While you're reading the story, all of a sudden, page 13, the unlucky number, you get a variation where it goes off track. And most of the time, it was drawn by Sergio Argonés, the Mad Magazine guy.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Ah, he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you see all these really crazy things in there. Just so much fun. A lot of plaid in some of Sergio's stuff.
Yep.
Sergio.
Yeah. Rufio. Anyway, let's move along. We got some radio, a whole lot of it, I hear, with Hollywood Hollywood, a suspense story coming up next.
Oh, yes. Absolutely, yeah. And this is this is when they lost their big sponsor, and so they were kind of sponsored by multiple things, but they continued on for another 6 years. So that's they done their job.
Did it get sponsored by Bromo Seltzer?
At Bromo one point, Seltzer. Perhaps, yeah.
Oh,
that was
that.
Bromo
Seltzer.
Those were
Bromo
fun
Seltzer,
for
Bromo
Inner Sanctums when they had those Bromo Seltzer ads on the Inner Sanctum. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get moving along here. Do we got an original broadcast date for this episode?
When I don't have to run down the hall. February 2nd. 1956.
Episode number 638.
Ooh. So it's two other guys in Utah.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a story of a ghost town and a practical joke that wasn't. We call it Hollywood Hostages. So now, starring Eve McVeigh and Tom Brown, here is tonight's suspense play, Hollywood Hostages.
Sounds really strong.
Yeah, murder. No director in Hollywood except the boy genius would have sent us out here.
There must be a ghost town closer to Hollywood.
There is. Beverly Hills after midnight.
I don't get it.
Get what?
Why he has to come to the middle of the desert to shoot this stuff. I can design sets that look a lot more like desert than this.
Oh, realism, my dear.
Well, Murphy does make good pictures.
The peasants know the difference. A picture's a picture.
I'd settle right now for the picture of a drink.
Well, look out at the sand.
For what?
Maybe you'll see a mirage with a drive-in.
How come everything on this road is closed?
Same reason Potterville closed. Ghost Town used to be a tourist trap, and the new freeway bypassed it. No tourists. No trap, just this lousy road.
I wonder how Murphy found out about this place.
From another zombie.
What's your knock on Murphy?
I hate practical jokers. This your first crack at a Murphy picture?
Mm-hmm.
You got a million laughs coming, if you live through.
He can't be that bad.
Oh, you don't know how far that guy goes. I know him good. Too good. You know what he did the day I got married? He had his lawyer file suit for divorce in my name.
That's not very funny.
And last year, I go to Florida to find an alligator farm. Murphy calls a pal who puts my picture in every post office.
Post office?
Sure, saying I'm wanted by the cops in Detroit. Oh, yeah, yeah. Hilarious when I got picked up, too. The cops down there wired Detroit. Detroit wired they were sending a detective to bring me back. I was in Cannes a week before Murphy had him let me out. I told that boy genius this morning, though. One more of his jokes this trip, and he gets himself a new location scout. I don't need him. I can always go back to being an unemployed comic.
Tommy?
Yeah?
Is that the ghost town out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be. Potterville's 180 miles from Hollywood.
The speedometer says 170.
Oh, dandy. 10 more miles and we'll be no place.
Hurt bad, Tex.
Just hang on, partner. We get inside. You can lay down. Man, look at them cobwebs. Ain't nobody open that door for a spell. In we go, partner. Ain't no furniture, Fred. Just you lay down here. On the floor. Oh, I know, Fred, them bullets hurt real bad.
Doc, I need a doc.
Fred, you seen for yourself. Ain't no doctor here. Ain't a living soul in this town, excepting us.
But, Tex, I'll die.
Yeah, guess you will at that. Too bad, but... No sense me waiting.
Tex, you can't just walk out.
Staying and dying with you ain't gonna be much help, is it? It's up to the others. Don't guess they'd be bust up splitting the bank money two ways instead of four. Must have already got to my place. I can't keep waiting.
No, Tex, don't leave me.
Well, there ain't much else I can do, Fred. You just got a real bad piece of luck. Cop don't nick our gas tank. We'd have been at the cabin. So long, Fred.
Tex, no, please.
Grab your gun.
I knew you wouldn't walk out.
Grab your gun and drag yourself to this window. A car's coming.
Cops?
It's too far to tell. It must be. This road don't go nowhere else.
How'd they know we were here?
That cop who shot the gas tank. Maybe I didn't get him.
I don't see no car.
That's... Hidden now by one of them dunes. There.
Yeah.
Now be ready. They are cops. We both better be shooting.
Welcome to Powderville.
Well. At least you've got no trouble parking. Got your camera?
Mm-hmm.
Creepy looking, Gina.
Yeah. Now hold it, Tommy. I want to get a shot of this board sidewalk.
Oh, yeah. You can't hardly get them no more.
Sit back a little.
You, like those Polaroid cameras?
Great. You get your picture in a minute. Yeah. If it comes up wrong, you shoot another one. Uh-huh. Now we pull the film through till it clicks. And the picture develops by itself.
Well, come on, let's case the joint while that shot's cooking, huh? Better get a shot of that Wells Fargo office.
Okay.
Sure. Leave Wells Fargo out of a Western, you can't get a seal of approval.
Tommy,
and it...
Listen. You hear anything?
Sure. Boards in the sidewalk. They squeak like $3 shoes.
No. No, a voice.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, that's from inside that place, the hotel. It's Conrad Hilton buying the joint.
No, I heard a man's voice.
Well, that sounds stronger than it looks.
I mean it.
Sure. Okay, you did hear a man's voice. So come on, let's make for the snapshots and curl up with a good bartender, huh? Hey, how many are you going to take?
I'm just about finished.
Mm-hmm. Get one of that blacksmith shop?
Not yet. Let's go around the corner first so I can get...
Hey, kid. Drop the other shoe.
Tommy, that car. Those holes in the windshield.
Air conditioning.
They're bullet holes.
I now pronounce you J. Edgar Hoover.
What do you suppose?
That car's a prop. It wouldn't be a kosher ghost town without a bullet-riddled car.
Oh?
Sure, you jumpy. Too much fresh air will do that.
Well, I'll get this shot at the hotel.
Another one at the hotel?
I need this angle.
Well, go ahead. I'll go look around. Hang in a minute. Grace! What is it?
A man.
A what?
You know, I saw a man.
Oh, come on now.
No, honest, I got him.
You what?
In the picture.
What did he pose as?
He stuck his head out of the door just as I was taking the picture.
Yeah? Well, then what happened?
I looked up.
And he was gone?
Yes.
But... Oh, honey. The way you dramatize, you...
There he is.
Hey.
He's running to our car.
And I left the keys in it. Come on. Hey, you. Dirty, little, no good, conniving.
Do you know him?
No, not that guy in the car, but don't you get it? He was planted.
Planted?
Yeah, to grab our car and strand us in the middle of the desert. Oh, I can hear that Murphy laughing now.
Murphy?
Natch!
This isn't funny.
No, it is to him. We've got no fault, no water, no food, and it's 23 miles to the nearest main highway.
Tommy.
Yeah.
Got another cigarette?
Uh-huh.
Oh, can I have one?
Well, as soon as Murph sends the car back, they're in the glove compartment.
Thanks loads.
Oh, I told you. Murphy's a million laughs.
Those clouds are coming this way.
That's all we need now. Rain.
How long do you think we'll be here?
Till Murphy stops laughing.
It's almost 4 o'clock now. Oh, Tommy, I felt a drop of rain.
Yeah, me too. On your feet. Come on.
Where? Every roof is full of holes.
Well, a hotel's two stories. Maybe the water's not coming all the way down.
That's where Murphy's friend came from.
Come on, let's run. Careful on the steps.
Oh, I'm soaked.
Yeah, and if you get pneumonia, Murphy laughs all the time you're in the hospital. It's a tie-up with Blue Cross.
Oh, let's go inside.
Go ahead.
Thanks.
Cheery little spot. Mm. Charles Adams does the decoration.
Well, at least it's dry in here.
Now what?
By the window. On the floor. A man. There's blood on his shirt. He's alive.
Natch, don't you get it? It ain't blood, it's ketchup. He's another Murphy stooge from Central Casting.
You sure?
Look, kid, I'm a veteran. 6 pictures with Murphy. Now, come on. Come on, back to the porch. All right. Keep groaning, kid. You'll win an Academy Award.
Tommy, I'm cold. Let's go inside.
And listen to that bum play Russian comedy?
We've got to do something.
Like to play a checker polo?
How about walking to the highway?
Oh, not in that water. Not giving Murphy that satisfaction.
His conscience has to bother him sometimes.
He's got a cast iron heart.
Tommy.
What?
A car. That is a car, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If it was on the main highway, we couldn't see it, could we?
No. No, it's headed here, all right.
Oh, he finally took pity.
All right. He's human.
Actually, now that it's over, it wasn't a bad joke.
Oh, he may not be through yet.
What else can he do once we get the car back?
Wait till he opens the door on this side. I'd hate to wait this long and then drown on the sidewalk. Well, I hope you called Murphy and he got a real big laugh. Oh, no, no, you don't have to come up here for us. Just open the car door.
He's got a gun.
Oh, brother, that Murphy keeps a joke going longer than he...
Get back.
Look, the joke is over. Let's go.
You ain't a-going no place.
Oh, yes, we are. Now, I've had enough of this.
I ain't never shot a lady yet. But, man, there's always a first time. Now, both of you, get back inside.
You are listening to Hollywood Hostages, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. In the long run, the security of a free country rests in the hands of its civilian soldiers. Professionals have their indispensable place, but the efficiency, strength, readiness, and the morale of our reserve components are vital. These are the words of President Eisenhower. This week, the nation is concentrating on National Defense Week as a tribute to our highly trained civilian reservists. More than 1,000 chapters of reserve officers, clubs around the country are observing National Defense Week with parades, meetings, and dinners. The rest of us join them in saluting the fine job the reservists do every week of every year.
Have you guys ever played a practical joke on anyone that you wish to share today?
Okay.
Or have you been practical joked?
I had one. Sprayer nozzles. You know those sprayer nozzles by, you know, your kitchen sink?
Right. Yes.
We had one upstairs. So, of course, I took the rubber band and did it. Well, because the only one that ever used that sink was my brother.
Oh,
but
no.
I was upstairs when I heard my father yell, "David." And when I came down, he was soaked because he turned it on and didn't turn it off quick enough.
Oh, no.
David! David!
He didn't even have to think about it. He just yelled out, "David." There are three of us there. How did he know? Okay, it was obvious.
Yeah.
How did I get the blame?
Right. But I set it up for my brother, and my dad set it off.
Nice.
Oh, shoot.
That's a good one.
I got pranked in the workplace once. I was an usher in a theater, and it was my first night where they gave me the keys to the entire theater and said,
"Oh no!
All right, as soon as everybody's out, lock up." All the other ushers, I had no idea. It was kind of like a pledging thing, frocking, flocking. I forget what they call it. All the other ushers were in on it. So we were playing the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And a few other scary things.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like 16, 17 years old. I've got, you know, keys to the kingdom. And I lock everything up. Everybody's out. I'm upstairs. I have to rewind the film for the next day. So I'm upstairs. And I hear all this noise down in the theater. I'm going, "Oh, my God, what's happening here?" I thought, who knows, you know.
Right.
And it was the other issue. I think they might have sprayed me down with a fire extinguisher. I'm not sure, but it was weird.
And Dale,
I might have liked that a little.
Never had a Yeah, I know you never did a practical joke.
We had this guy when I was in sales in the mortgage industry every day, and we were making good money. There were good times then, and we'd go out for these pretty big lunches, but every day this guy would start to nod off. Well, it was the holiday seasons, and he woke up a Christmas tree. We decorated him with all the holiday stuff. It was actually one of the lights got on his face and burned him, which woke him up. So that's the only one that comes to mind. I'm sure there were others.
But for some reason, that's a loaded
stuff to people. Like, I didn't give them hot foots or stick firecrackers up their nose or what have you.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, I think that's a loaded question with Dale. His answer should have been, which time did I prank someone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which one do you want to hear about? Yeah, you're right.
Have either of you ever owned a whoopee cushion?
Oh, yes. They made an innovation. They made an innovation to the whoopee cushion, whereas someone came up with this amazing thought. Well, you know, the problem with the whoopee cushion is you use it. It's a one-time thing. What if it reinflated?
Right.
Someone inserted a sponge inside a whoopee cushion, and then it goes down, it pops back up. It goes down, it pops back up. So I thought that was kind of...
Oh, boy. Oh, no. <I don't>...
Multiple whoopees.
Yes.
Yes. I'm sure.
Right. Yes. So it can be marketed as the refiring whoopee cushion, I guess. I don't know.
I'm blushing practically. In any event...
I mean, there's no better Christmas than you get the 300-pound aunt, and she sits down on the couch and, you know, and, oh, wow, what's up there, auntie?
Yeah. We got to wrap up this episode.
Wow, you asked for it.
Welcome back, guy. We love you. We just love you.
Uh-huh.
And now we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Tom Brown and Eve McVeigh, starring in tonight's production, Hollywood Hostages, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Mister?
Yeah, ma'am?
You bring any food?
I'm sorry, ma'am.
They all want to play Gary Cooper.
How long do we have to stay here?
You can't rightly say.
Look, we've got some place to go.
Me too. Mighty important for me to get through that roadblock by the freeway, but...
What do you care about the roadblock?
Whole flock of cops up there.
So?
They're looking for four of us. Held up the bank this morning over in Desert City.
You...
Fred there, by the window. He's one. I'm another.
All right. I'll give you the straight line. Who are the other two? Groucho and Harpo?
No, sir. Sit down.
Tommy, this might not be a joke.
Okay, you want to stay and chat? Go ahead. I'm leaving.
Tommy!
Now, look, pal. I know Murphy can keep a gag running longer than Oklahoma, but...
I missed you that time because I wanted to. Next time might be different.
Can't you even tell us one thing?
What's that, ma'am?
Look, I've got a date tonight. How long did Murphy hire you for?
Murphy?
Honey, he can't let on until the Marines rescue us in the nick of time. And then that bum on the floor gets up.
You hadn't ought to be talking like that about Fred. He was a nice fella. If I was you, I'd cut out them wisecracks.
Oh, you should have caught me when I played the palace. I used to make 1,000 people at a time wish I'd cut out them wisecracks. Oh, come on, pal. You got your laugh, so let's blow the joint, huh?
We ain't leaving.
Why not?
Well, I told you, ma'am. There's a roadblock.
Okay.
Well, as long as Murphy don't take us our salary, I don't care how long we stay.
But I'm hungry.
Oh, he won't starve us. That bad he is.
Say, I got me an idea. Maybe we don't have to stay here.
Oh, no, you're cooking.
Them cops, they ain't looking for you. If you was to sit in front, mean back,
Yeah. That's real smart of me. Come on.
Say, pal.
Yeah?
How about Itty Bitty Buddy on the floor? How's he getting back? My camel?
Wish we could take Fred.
Well, there's plenty of room in the back. Fred!
Well, that's nice of you, ma'am, but we better be going without him.
Wait here with him, Grace. I'll open the car doors. Come on.
I'm getting under the blanket back here.
Do we have to keep playing?
Lady, just you and him don't say nothing wrong. When we get to that there roadblock.
Yeah, yeah, I know, I know. Because you'll have that there shooting iron pointing at my head.
That's right.
Yeah, I know that whole bit.
Mister, I don't rightly know why, but I like you. Guess maybe it's because you don't scare you.
Oh, I've been working for Murphy too long. But no more. I've had enough. A minute we hit Hollywood, I'm through.
Roadblock. It's right up ahead a piece.
I reckon so, partner.
Mister, I told you once. I don't like folks making fun of me.
Tommy, please.
Now, I'm getting under this here blanket again.
Mm-hmm. Sweet dream.
You better slow down.
Now, don't you start giving me orders.
Shouldn't we get in that line?
Huh? Oh, I guess so.
What a night.
Murphy's probably having a party at Forest Lawn.
There's a police car.
Well, how do you think they blocked the road with meatballs?
Remember what I said.
Oh, I'll never forget that. 67 years.
The policeman's waving his flashlight.
Okay. Oh, fine. Now the window's stuck.
Good evening.
No comment.
We're looking for two men. One about 5'7" tall, black hair, around 30 years of age. He might be wounded. The other man's about 6'1" tall, about 35 years old. Blonde hair, and he was wearing blue jeans and cowboy boots.
Yes, officer.
We haven't seen them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tommy.
Lady, you almost just got killed.
Tommy, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you tell the officer?
Let Murphy tell everybody at the Derby he scared me so much I copped a plea. No, ma'am.
But the policeman, he described this one. And the man on the floor back in Powderville.
Sure, I told you how far Murphy goes. He's even got the cops in on this one.
It stopped raining.
Bully. That makes my whole day.
Slow up, mister.
What for?
Turn off this here road just over the hill.
But that's not the way back to Hollywood.
We ain't a-going back to Hollywood, ma'am.
Where are we a-going?
Meet them other two fellas. They got the money. They threw it in their car when we run out of the bank.
Tommy, it's true.
Look, suppose I believe you. Now mind you, I'm not...
Don't rightly seem to matter.
What happens after we get to their cabin?
Be crossing that bridge when we come to it, ma'am. Here, mister. Turn off here.
Okay.
That's fine. Now, just keep it driving up into them hills. Here's the place.
Pretty little hovel.
Drive around to the side.
Oh, you only use the front way and formal closer.
Turn off the motor. Now give me the keys.
Oh, now come on, pal. How far do you want
give
an idiot
to... Give me the keys.
Tommy, please. Here.
Thank you, ma'am.
Now what happens?
I'm a-going in the side here. You two go knock on the front door.
Why?
I just like to be sure my friends ain't a-planning no surprise for me.
You mean...
Just do like I say.
Open the door. Now, go knock on the front door.
Look, why should we... Okay, I've seen more guns today than Gene Autry. Come on, Grace.
Tommy?
Huh?
Can we run for it?
Where?
Any place.
Oh, too dark, too far to the highway.
Tommy!
Oh, now I'm sure this is a Murphy gag.
Are you crazy? Somebody inside's been
shot. Honey, in a minute that door will open and old Tex will say, I guess you folks can come in now.
But those were gunshots.
Sure. And inside, we'll see two more guys playing dead.
It's him.
Fetch.
Yes, you folks can come in now.
Hark, the evening coyotes.
Tommy.
What?
How can you?
Oh, stiff upper, old girl.
Tommy, I'm scared. What's he doing in that room?
Probably calling Murphy and giving him a blow-by-blow.
But those two men on the floor, and the money, that was real money.
Murphy always goes for good props. Now, honey, use your head. Look, if those two guys were going to double-cross him, would they wait here till he got back? No, they just walk out with the loot.
Maybe it's like he said. They needed some place to hide, but they didn't need him to take a share.
I can tell a Murphy story when I hear one. Oh, I'll get the gas chamber for killing Murphy, but it'll be worth it.
Okay. Come on. You too, ma'am.
We're really going home?
Just partway. As far as the cliff.
Oh, that does it. If Murphy thinks he's throwing in a hokey bit like pushing the car off the cliff...
Shut up.
I'm not...
Tommy, he isn't fooling.
You're right, lady. Now, both of you turn and walk out that door. When we get to the car, we'll...
Don't move!
Huh?
Don't move! I'll take that gun.
This time, Parker, we got stronger cuts. All right, hold him out. One of you own this camera?
Me? Where did you find it, officer?
One of our men found it in the hotel at the old ghost town. Looked inside, saw the last picture you took.
The last picture?
Mm-hmm.
The one where he stuck his head out of the door.
That's right. We recognized him, got a tip on his cabin, and made it here as quick as we could.
Did I tell you?
Tell me what?
In the nick of time, in popped the Marine.
Mister, I gotta hand it to you. You took this pretty calm.
Okay. Okay, now let's cut the clowning, huh?
But... Didn't you know? He's Tex Parker, wanted for 3 murders, and from the looks of it, he's 2 more over there.
Those guys dead. Who are you kidding?
I'm not kidding, buddy.
Okay. Okay, so the gang's finished now, huh? All right. Okay, boys, wake up, wake up. Time for wakey. Don't call us, we'll call you.
Tommy, don't.
Come on. Come on. Hey, that's not ketchup. They are dead.
Tommy.
Okay, lady. We'll go as soon as we can bring him to.
Suspense. In which Eve McVeigh and Tom Brown starred in tonight's presentation of Hollywood Hostages. Next week, we bring you the true story of 5 polar explorers and their race against death. We call it The Diary of Captain Scott. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed in Hollywood by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's script was written by Jerry Lewis. The music was composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Don Diamond, Frank Gerstle, and John Larch. A hot money racket proves to be a shortcut to the cooler once the FBI in Peace and War goes into action tomorrow night.
Harassed by personal debt, the cashier at the $50 window at a large racetrack falls for a big-time racketeer scheme for passing stolen money through the betting window. But before he can solve his personal financial problems, the FBI in Peace and War gets on his trail, and not long after that, another welcome mat appears, right outside the gate to the penitentiary. For a thrill-a-minute drama, don't miss the FBI in Peace and War at this same time tomorrow night. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News, to be followed on most of these stations by The Jack Carson Show. The Radio Workshop presents New and Unusual, Friday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
House Radio is brought to you by the letter B and the number 69.
Ooh. Hey, come on in. Door's open.
And the word Jungle Jim. Wow.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents another Gar's Moral of the Story.
Reality is 9/10 perception.
Okay. There's wisdom in that moral.
Hey, yeah, we got great one of your favorites left, and it's gonna. Yeah, we got one of your favorite shows left, and it's. We're gonna need to slip right into that here.
Yes, I saved the best for last. With some Damon Runyon theater.
Yes.
And this little tale is called The Brakeman's Daughter, and it's from
September 20, 1949.
Episode number 38.
Come on, Broadway.
The Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master storyteller, Damon Runyon, and this one, The Brakeman's Daughter. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. Well, it is of a fine spring morning, and I am just standing on the corner of 44th watching the spring weather take over and trying to get a few gulps of fresh air in between large portions of taxi exhaust. That is a wonderful morning, and I am thinking how wonderful it is when I feel a tap on my shoulder. I look around and see a young guy's face grinning at me. The face opens and says,
"Well, now, my old pal, Broadway.
The Hummingbird. Well, 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 and how are you?"
"Just great. You ain't changed a bit since I saw you last."
"2 years ago, huh?"
"Yeah, just about."
"What brings you to New York from Cleveland, Ohio?"
"Oh, the big false face sent for me."
"Uh-oh."
"No rough stuff, just sort of a business conference."
"When the big false face calls a business conference, it is very likely to get rough."
"Nah, everything's peaceful. Oh, boy, what weather. I like spring."
"It has its points. Mainly, it brings on no snow."
"Uh-huh. You know, I..." "Hey, Broadway, take a look at this doll coming at us."
"Yeah, she is very restful on the eye."
"You know her?"
"Never see her before."
You
know a hummingbird?"
"Me? I, no."
"She looks at you."
"Yeah. Boy, I never saw a doll like that before.
Neither do I.
You know, I wish I knew her. Yeah, I sure do.
Well, I cannot help agreeing with the hummingbird, because the doll who passes is very pleasant to behold. Also, she looks at him, and he looks at her, and it is just the same as if they hold 2 hours' conversation. But they are both young, and it is spring. And the way language can pass between young guys and young dolls without them saying a word is practically uncanny. Well, the hummingbird gets his wish. He meets her. And how he does, and what happens after, is something I will tell you in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Brakeman's Daughter.
Like I say, the hummingbird gazes after the doll. She looks back at him, and there is almost a high voltage line between them. Then something happens.
Gee, what a doll. What a
doll. Hey, she is not looking where she is going.
Crossing against the lights. That truck. Hey, miss! Come on, Broadway. Hey, miss! Look out! Hey, you, what do you think you're doing, crossing a cow pasture?
Are you hurt? You all right?
Yes, that was stupid of me.
Nah. Well, look where you're driving a truck, Mac.
Yeah, maybe you want trouble, huh?
None at all. But I got some extra if you want any.
Oh, please, it was my fault. I wasn't looking. I crossed against the line.
Sure you did.
You better move on, Mac.
Who do you think you are?
I said you better move on.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Hey, look, miss, you got to get out of the street. Come on.
Thank you.
You all right, little miss?
What? Oh, yes, thanks. Just a little shake.
That is a narrow escape you have.
I should have tattooed that truck driver's noggin a little.
Oh, no, it wasn't his fault. I guess I've got to learn how to cross streets in New York.
You're new here, huh?
Yes.
Oh.
I didn't thank you for pulling me out of the way.
Oh, it's all right.
Well, you could have been hurt.
Not a chance.
Yes, there was.
Oh, forget it.
I guess I'll be going.
Sure.
I've got some shopping to do.
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess I'll be going.
Uh-huh.
I guess she has to go, hummingbird.
Yeah.
Well, goodbye, and thank you again.
Oh, sure. Don't mention it.
Goodbye. I've got to be going.
So long.
Her name is Sophie Glutz, and she lives in Flatbush.
Huh? You say something, Broadway?
I say her name is Ermeline Wurzenheimer, and she lives in Schenectady.
What?
Like I say, her name is Salome Schultz. She lives in the Bronx.
Holy mackerel, I don't even know her name.
Now, that is very strange. You practically save her life, and you do not find out her name.
What a dope, what a sap.
Well, she is walking very slow-like. I do not think she is in much of a hurry to get someplace.
Sure, come on.
I will wait here. Well, get going. For a guy who is hurrying after her, you are given a great imitation of Grant too.
Let it go.
Now I see everything. The hummingbird passing up a chance to meet a doll.
That kind, yeah.
Why do you say that?
Dolls like her ain't for me.
She does not seem to think so.
Nah, she don't know me from Adam.
This is news.
Well, you don't get it. You've got a good look at her?
I am fairly busy taking in details, yes. Why?
So, a doll like that wouldn't give a guy like me a tumble if she knew who I was.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know it. Chances are she'd keel over in a dead faint if she found out I was the hummingbird.
You got another name?
Forgot it long ago.
I see.
A hummingbird. Flits from doll to doll. All the same kind of dolls. Not like her.
Yeah, I get your point, but things can change.
For me? Yeah, what am I standing here for? I got to find the big false face and see what he wants with me.
Oh, sure.
Besides, he promised to introduce me to a real classy doll.
Oh, so?
Sure. Doll he calls the Brakeman's Daughter.
The Brakeman's Daughter?
Yeah. Hey, you said that like you knew her.
No, 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 I never meet her.
Well, why you got that funny look on your face?
I have? Well, I, maybe I think of something funny.
Oh, okay. Want to come along with me?
Where?
See the big false face.
Who, me? Look, Hummingbird, if I know the kind of a meeting this will be, and I think I do, I will stay away.
There ain't going to be no trouble. Come on along. Maybe we'll have some laughs.
Maybe we will have some laughs, he says. He does not know that the big false face has a sense of humor. And one of the face's biggest jokes is the brakeman's daughter. Anyway, I go along with the Hummingbird, and we get to the place where Big False Face is having this little meeting. He is called False Face because he always wears a castor oil smile that looks like it is painted on. This smile is strictly a throw-off because he is often smiling when he is not amused at anything. Well, like I say, we get to the place. The Hummingbird goes in a room. I sit outside with a guy by the name of Crowbar Connolly, one of the Face's boys. And the scene is as follows.
How come you come along, Broadway?
Me? Well, Crowbar, it is a long time since I see the Hummingbird.
You didn't tip him to the gag, did you?
No.
Good thing. False Face don't like his gag spoiled.
Does he not ever get tired of the brakeman's daughter, Rip?
Why should he? It's a good gag. I remember the time Rocco Scarpati got it.
Yeah, so do I.
It was in the dead of winter. Rocco didn't find his way out of the woods. He froze to death.
Yeah, I remember.
Of course. It wasn't False Face's fault.
No, of course not. He has nothing to do with it.
He just likes his fun, that's all.
A very light-hearted guy.
Working the gimmick on the Hummingbird is going to be good. The kid's a lady killer. You know what the False Face tells him?
No.
He tells the Hummingbird that the brakeman's daughter sees him the last time he's in town. Can't wait to meet him. That good?
Oh, it is screamingly funny. And it will be especially funny when the Hummingbird finds out there is no such character as the brakeman's daughter.
Look, he ain't gonna find it out unless he's tipped. As I told you before, the False Face don't like his gags tipped.
Believe me, Crowbar, as much as I like the Hummingbird, I like to live also.
You're smart, Broadway.
I am alive.
Yeah, boys are in there a long time. Maybe the False Face is having trouble with cheeks.
Cheeks? Cheek Shiraki?
Yeah, why?
Oh, there is a bad boy.
Yeah, well, the False Face got him to rights. If Cheeks don't want to go along with the merger, well...
Yeah, I see.
Uh-huh. Now, I...
So we got it all settled, huh, Cheek?
I guess I gotta play ball with you, False Face.
Sure, sure. We all team up. Make a better deal for everybody. Well, hello, Broadway.
Hello, False Face.
I'm kind of surprised to see you here.
So am I.
I brought him along, False Face.
Oh, I see. Maybe you told him where you was going tonight, Hummingbird, huh?
Yeah, I told him.
Hmm? The brakeman's daughter is a classy doll. Ain't she, Broadway?
Huh? Oh, sure she is, yeah.
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 I gotta be running along, Face.
Sure, Cheeks.
Yeah, see you later.
Wait a minute, Cheeks. You're satisfied with the deal, ain't you, Cheeks?
Sure. It's a good deal. Why?
I was just asking. You seem kind of sore in the other room.
Sore at you, Face?
Maybe.
Why should I be sore?
Maybe because you ain't gonna like me as top man.
I got no argument.
That's the way, Cheeks. That's the way. You play ball my way. And you'll play ball a lot longer.
Sure. I get it. Well... See you later.
Cheeks ain't real happy.
You better watch him, Face.
I will, Crowbar. Well, what's everybody looking so down about, huh?
I guess I have got to go.
Stick around, Broadway.
I have got an appointment.
Later.
You want me anymore, Face?
No, Hummingbird. Oh, boy, are you a lucky guy. Ain't he, Crowbar?
Yeah, there's a million guys that give their right arms to meet the brakeman's daughter.
Yeah, and boom, she sees you talking to me the last time you're in town, and right off she falls. Like that.
Yeah?
Am I kidding, Crowbar?
No, she falls for you, all right, Hummingbird.
Like all dames do.
Yeah.
I wish I could make them tumble like that.
Well, it's a gift, Face.
I guess so.
What time you want me to meet you tonight?
8, right here.
Sure, I'll be here. Come on, Broadway?
Yeah, sure.
Stick around, Broadway.
But I have got
Stick around. I ain't seen you for a long time. I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, but I...
All right.
See you later, Broadway. Face.
Sure. You don't think it's funny, Broadway?
Ha ha.
You got objections?
Look, Face, why pull the gag on a nice kid like the Hummingbird? Pick a guy like Cheek.
He knows the gag. I pulled it on him 2 years ago.
Oh.
You ain't figuring on maybe tipping the Hummingbird, are you? Broadway, I like to have my fun.
Yeah, but the Hummingbird will find out I know the gag. He is not going to take it kindly that I do not tip him.
And I won't take it kindly if you do.
You don't want to spoil no fun, do you, Broadway?
I love to see everybody happy, including myself. But one cannot have everything in this world, I guess.
It's the ticket.
Look. The Hummingbird's a cinch to fall for a rib like the brakeman's daughter.
Yeah.
First off, he is a 1-2 hit with the doll. Second, he knows it. Third, he never passes up a chance to make the acquaintance of any new doll.
Yeah.
Brother, oh, I can hardly wait to see the look on his face. Oh, it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it is a big joke. But it turns out a little different than the big false face thinks it will. Now, maybe you are wondering what the gag is and what is all the mystery about. Well, I will tell you that in a minute.
That's right, Broadway will be back to complete the tale of the Beakman's daughter.
Yeah.
I'm following
what
the story.
What a fun
but
joke that is. Go ahead, yeah. Gar. Go ahead, Gar.
I'm following the story, but is it supposed to be mobsters and weird nicknames?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Jimmy, two times.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry.
Barely
another
four
good
feet,
fellow's
you know,
right
I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
We got to do some shameless self-promotion at the end of this program, so let us continue with the exciting conclusion of The Brakeman's Daughter from Damon Runyon Theater.
Leave us do that, yes.
Leave us do that, Broadway.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Brakeman's Daughter.
Well, it comes up that night. The Hummingbird comes into Mindy's where I am having a bite to eat. He sits down, and the scene is as follows.
I'm kind of jittery tonight, Broadway.
Huh? To tell the truth, I am more than somewhat nervous myself.
Yeah? What about?
Well, I do not know.
But come to think of it, you've been acting kind of funny. What's eating you?
Nothing at all, Hummingbird. Nothing at all.
I got a kind of funny feeling. Maybe I shouldn't go with the false face tonight.
What makes you feel that way?
I don't know. Yeah, it's a funny thing. A week ago, I'd have jumped at the chance to meet up with a classy doll like the face says the brakeman's daughter is, and...
Yeah.
Hey, why do they call her that?
Well, you see... But does not false face tell you the whole story?
Well, he did say something about her old man being pretty careful about the doll.
That is it.
And, they live out in the island, way out.
That is what I hear.
You know, I wonder if it's worth it. Maybe I just ought to forget the whole thing.
Maybe you should.
On the other hand, why should I pass up the chance to meet the doll? She says she wants to meet me.
Uh-huh.
Ever since this morning when I saw that other doll, I've been jumpy. I wish I'd have gotten a name and address.
She seems like a very nice doll to know.
But not for me, I guess.
Well. Hello, Hummingbird. Broadway.
Hiya, Crowbar.
Oh, Crowbar.
Ain't it about time you got going, Hummingbird?
It's only a quarter to eight.
Yeah. Gee, I wish I was you, kid. I see the brakeman's daughter once, and she is 100%. Me. No doll like that ever goes for me.
Mm. Well, guess I'll be going.
Sure. Good luck, kid.
Thanks. See you later, Broadway.
Yeah, okay, Hummingbird.
Been a good boy, Broadway?
Yeah.
Face can hardly wait. He's got a new angle all cooked up for the hummingbird.
Oh? I think he thinks of every angle. He works the gag 100 times.
Oh, this is different. He planted some of the boys out there. And listen, when he knocks on the door, one of the boys is going to start blasting away with a rod. Like it's the brakeman guarding his daughter.
My, my. The face certainly does it up fancy.
Naturally, the hummingbird's going to take the wind because he don't want to catch any lead.
A very sound decision.
Then the face is going to lead him into the woods out there and lose him.
The same woods where Rocco Scarpati freezes to death, huh?
Yeah. That was an added attraction.
Yeah. I wonder what the hummingbird is going to say and do when he finds out what happens to him.
Who cares? It's only a gag. I'd like to see the hummingbird's face when he's wandering around in them woods with nobody around for miles and miles. Boy, he's going to be real tired when he finally gets back to New York.
So that is the gag. The hummingbird is the sucker. The big false face will lose him in the woods. Well, Face and the hummingbird get out to this lonely part of Long Island. It is very dark, and the only way you can get there is in a car. The house is one that nobody lives in, so it is perfect for the rip. Then the proceedings go as follows.
You gotta be real quiet now, hummingbird.
I think I can get lost out here. Hey, how come this doll lives in a joint like this?
I told you. Our old man don't like nobody to get close enough to hand her a slice of fruitcake.
Look, maybe it ain't worth it.
Are you kidding? I tell you, this doll is $1 million, a pile of diamonds. And she takes a fancy to you.
Dolls are a dime a dozen.
Not like this one. Wait a second.
What's the matter, Face?
Nothing. I just want to be careful.
You sure the brakeman ain't home?
She told me he's on a run to Albany.
Yeah, but maybe he'll come back.
You scared?
Me?
You're acting like it. The way I hear it, you ain't afraid of nothing.
Well, you heard it right, Face.
And then what are you beefing about? You scared of an old guy?
I'm scared of nobody.
If you are, we can go back to the car and drive back to New York. Well?
I was just thinking.
About what?
Another doll.
Who?
I don't know.
You crazy?
Guess so.
Now, look. I promised a doll I'd bring you tonight. You're going to make me look like a welcher?
Okay, let's go.
Sure.
Where's the house?
Right up ahead.
I don't see any lights.
Sure not. There's trees in the way.
Yeah.
Now, look. I'm going to go onto the porch with you, and I'll knock on the door. When the doll answers, you're on your own, see?
I get it.
All right. I'll wait at the car for you.
Okay.
Careful now. We're almost there. There's the porch.
Okay, let's go.
You got to take it easy. Take a look around first.
I don't see anybody. Fact is, I don't believe there's anybody around for miles.
Except the brakeman's daughter.
All right, let's go.
Sure. Now, remember, I'll knock, the doll will answer, and then I leave. You got it?
You told me 100 times.
I just want to be sure you know.
Okay, there's the door.
Boy, this is going to give you one big kick.
Well?
It's funny. Somebody ought to answer. Beat it, kid. It's the brakeman.
Face! Hey, Face!
The ward, to the right. Come on.
Face!
Come on!
In here. Get in here.
Huh? What the...
Please, get in.
I gotta get out of here.
Please, be quiet.
You...
Never mind that now. Wait.
Look here, doll. Hey, it's a car. Close.
Hey, you're the girl this morning.
I guess they're gone.
Who are you talking about? What are you doing here?
I live here.
No, you ain't.
Oh, I was scared. Those men came here. They hid all around the house.
What men? Look, miss, open up, will you? Give, spill it. What happened?
I was upstairs. I heard a car pull up and stop, and then I heard some men talking. I was scared.
Why didn't you call the cops?
There's no phone.
Well, you could have put on the lights.
There are none, not yet.
Look, maybe we better start from the beginning. Now tell me what happened.
Well, I heard the car and then the men. I came downstairs. Somebody tried this door, but I'd locked it from the inside. They tried the windows, but I'd locked them.
Yeah, then what?
Well, I waited and listened. They went off the porch around to the side of the house. I heard them talking.
Well, who were they?
I don't know, but I heard one of them say something that sounded like chic.
Chic? Chic? Cheeks! Was it cheeks?
Yes, that was it. Cheeks.
You wait here.
Where are you going? Please don't leave me.
Okay, come along. But easy.
When I saw you and heard you...
Just enough moonlight for that.
What were those men doing? And I...
Oh, wait. You better stop right there.
Why?
Take it easy.
He's dead.
Yeah. He got enough slugs in him to sink a battleship.
Who is he?
He was a guy we called Big False Face. Now, it's okay, baby. It's okay. There's nothing to worry about now.
If I hadn't recognized you, you would...
Yeah. If you hadn't, I'd have been with False Face, right alongside him.
He'd have killed you, too.
Seems likely. Now, maybe you better start doing some explaining.
Me? But
yeah. How come you were here?
Well, I live here.
So you're the...
I just moved in today. It was the only place we could find. That's why there are no lights, no phones.
Oh, yeah. And you're sure nobody lives in this place before you come in?
No one. That's why I wondered how you found out who I was and how you found my address so soon. How did you?
Don't make no difference now. Yeah, looks like a real funny gag. Yeah, a real funny one. Only it didn't work out the right way for a guy I used to know.
That is what happens. Cheek Shiraki takes advantage of the opportunity to rub out Big False Face. It is a perfect spot for it. Well, there is a big to-do. The gendarmes do a lot of work, and they come up with Cheeks. Naturally, the hummingbird is cleared because the doll tells what she knows. But that is not the end of the story. And what the payoff is, I will tell you in a minute. Like I say, Cheek Shiraki is tagged for rubbing out Big False Face. Then it is a couple days later that I am sitting in Mindy's with the hummingbird talking about the whole thing.
Cheeks had it figured perfect. He knew the False Face was going to be out there. I'd be the only witness. Besides a couple of the faces, boys who were rubbed out first.
And the doll saves you, huh?
Yeah. Cheeks didn't know she was in the house. It looked perfect. But it wasn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know... Hey, what did you know about the gag?
Me? I know it all along, Hummingbird.
You do, huh?
Yeah.
And you didn't tell me?
Only because I have no idea what is going to happen.
Nah. Okay. Oh, no.
What is the matter?
Look, the doll, come on over here. I got to get out of here.
You do? Why?
Well, just because I...
Hello, there.
Hi.
Hello, miss. Sit down.
No.
Hummingbird, where are your manners?
Thank you. You left so suddenly the other night.
Yeah, I did.
Why?
Well, I had some business to attend to.
I guess so. I thought maybe you'd come out and see me, but you didn't. So I asked about you, and someone told me I might find you here.
Okay, you found me. So what?
Nothing.
You know, Hummingbird, it seems to me that a young miss like this needs somebody to show her around New York.
Okay, show her.
Who, me? Oh, I can think of no place interesting she might like to see if I took her.
Okay. What odds will you give me, Broadway?
On what?
On my chances.
Oh, I never take such a short-end bet.
What are you talking about?
Oh, a brakeman's daughter.
What? What did you say?
The brakeman's daughter. But, forget it.
You're an amazing person.
I am?
He is? Why?
Why, because first you found out where I lived without even knowing my name, and then you seem to know my father.
I do?
Well, you're only a little wrong. You see, my father is one of the oldest and best-known conductors on the Erie Railroad.
And so ends the famous Damon Runyon story, The Brakeman's Daughter. Listen in again next week for The Damon Runyon Theater.
Farmer's Daughter.
The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville, and the stories adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. Vern Carstensen is in charge of production. This is a Mayfair production.
This is an Eerie House production.
Eeny, meeny, chili beany, the spirits are about to speak.
Oh, my. I guess they are about to speak as Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
Having vices are okay as long as your fingers don't get caught in them.
Down the drain. Now, are you going to be in shape tomorrow night at, oh, say, 8 o'clock when we're done with tomorrow's Eerie House Radio?
I will, but my cable company is not playing pool.
Still so, giving you wrangling problems there, huh? All right.
I did get a two-month refund, but I told them, I was like, yeah, I'm not independently wealthy or anything, and I appreciate the fact that I am being compensated for not receiving the service I'm paying for, but I really want the service, so I don't
know. Yeah, so let's stick with that and turn the juice back on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
You a bunch of rummies? Yeah. Yeah, so tomorrow night, we're continuing with the tomfoolery with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Transformation of Joby. That's just one more joke.
Yeah.
Just one more.
One more.
Yep.
If you read headlines on this day, do you accept them as April Fool, or do you accept them as, oh, wow, look at the news? I leaned towards the April Fool's aspect. It says college track star killed by drunk driver, and I was like, why didn't he outrun the truck? You know, but you know.
Yeah, how good was he? How good was he?
Ooh, ow, yeah. Ooh, ah.
He couldn't outrun.
Apparently,
the
he
truck,
wasn't one of the top college track stars. You know, but no.
Condolences
to whoever you are.
Shoelaces.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
have another one.
Yeah. So, yeah, tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern, and we will do that CBS Radio Mystery Theater. More practical jokes.
I'm
more
going
practical
to
jokes, huh?
Oh, well.
Yep.
There's that hot dog thing. I thought that was crazy. But the hot dog water, that was pretty cool.
Hot dog water.
You cook up some hot dogs. You take the water from whence they were cooked. You put it into an ice tray, and then you give it to guests that you don't like. Have some Pepsi with an ice cube, and oh, it tastes horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, hot dog water, ice cubes. Not my favorite hors d'oeuvre. Now, if you put the little bugs in them, that's good.
Yeah, that's okay, right, because they don't taste any different, you know, yeah.
No, and that makes them crunchy sometimes.
There's a novelty thing where you get plastic eyeballs, and you put them in your ice cube and freeze them up, and then your drink is looking at you as you look at it.
Yeah, here's looking at you, bud. Yeah.
Get yours now. Well, see you tomorrow night at 6:30, and then right afterwards, it's Huddle Huddle, Static Guy of the Goal. Maybe a rerun?
Yes, a rerun of some type.
Very good. All righty, that'll be tomorrow. Goodbye.
The castle lights are growing dim. Okay. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Don't come alone.
And her.
Don't come alone.
And them.
All right, we missed the candle, poof, but and, there you go.
And hot dog water ice cubes. Woo!
Yeah. Michael Jackson said that's another one in the can. Oh,
no! Hello.
That's, I'm sorry.
You can't say that joke in Florida, can you? You can't say that.
You can say that joke wherever you are. I don't know.
Just don't say it to like four-year-olds. They don't need to know that. They don't need to know. Should be doing comic books like we did.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, I just recently ran across
Monsters
that thing
of
about
Filmland and all those fun things that kept me out of trouble. Well, some trouble.
Yes. Now, what were the ones you read, Dale? The Vault of Horror or something like that? Were the comic books on the?
Well, no, those came later for me. I'll give you a brief history of my comic book experience growing up as a kid. All right, so when I was adopted, there were a few old comics, mostly Harvey stuff, like Hot Stuff,
right,
and Wendy the Good Witch, and Spooky.
Right.
Cutie stuff. There was a couple of Gold Keys, I remember. Maybe the Phantom, and maybe Mandrake the Magician. And we didn't have too many of those. I like those illustrated classics, so we always saw those like at the dentist's office or something. The illustrated classics of the classic stories, you know? But then, in about, 1967, 68, we went somewhere, I forget, and there was I had never seen this before in my young life. I'm only like 6 or 7 years old. A vending machine with comic books, and there was issue number 67 of Spider-Man. So I had already experienced Spider-Man on the,
wow,
on the TV. And I was just enraptured. I remember it was the second part of a two-parter with Mysterio. And I was hooked on Marvel Comics from then on. I didn't start buying them. I didn't have my own money, though, until I want to say about 72. I started buying them regularly, running to the bookstore and getting all my Marvels, getting Spidey, Fantastic Four, Hulk, and some of the little spin-off things like Marvel Team Up and stuff, and all the annuals. I made sure I got the annual editions too, and started raiding other kids' closets and trying to purchase all their comic books from them to build up a massive collection.
I remember as a youngster, and remember, I was born in 64, so a little bit later, but
right.
I was with my dad. As a very youngster, still under the age of 7, I guess, I don't know. And he took me to someone's house, and they had, on some makeshift shelving, Spider-Man number 1. And they said, and it's like, hey, kid, go read the comic books. And I'm like over there holding Spider-Man number 1, first printing.
Wow.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
and not just did he have one, but he had 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. And they were just sitting there. And this was before 1970, so 1969, somewhere in there. And then the Avengers, and I read those. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And I'm a little kid, you know, just going, oh, wow.
Sure.
The Avengers, Hulk, Fantastic Four. This guy had like this mini collection that in these days and times would be worth possibly $1 million.
That's not a mini.
How many is mini?
Yeah, that's
mini.
I mean, in today's terms, millions of dollars. But he had, I don't know, 100 of these just sitting out on this makeshift shelving, and I was like, and they were in good shape. They were, he had them flat, and you know, they were in good shape and everything. It was just like, wow,
amazing.
And the artwork was just the first time seeing comic artwork. It was just, wow.
Doesn't it feel right having Gar back? Doesn't it? I mean,
it does.
It always feels right doing Erie House, but there's something, a sense of completeness.
There's definitely something missing when Gar's. Yeah.
Yeah. To the family, we've added CW to the family, and
hopefully she'll be there tomorrow for you guys.
She's adopted like me.
Yes, there you go.
Well, not like me. God.
As she explained at one time, I think she said she was walking alongside a road and we pulled her into a van, something like
yes.
that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Unmarked window.
Not creepy at all.
not creepy at all. No. No. Nothing to see here.
I've recently been rereading the memory thing. So every time I read these books, it's like, oh, it's brand new. I don't remember reading it all. I've got these books that are about 500 pages thick called DC Showcase Presents. And I ran across a collection. It's called The Phantom Stranger. And they're supernatural tales. And this guy shows up, I am the Phantom Stranger, and he helps people out. Well, I just found out that there's a Mego of the Phantom Stranger, and I just recently acquired one of them. And one of the crazy things he's got, and I noticed it in the comics, is he has a cloak clasp. He has a cape, and instead of it being tied around his neck, he has this brass cloak clasp, and it's a piece of chain that runs across and connects with two pieces of brass onto the cloak. I just got one from Great Britain. I got a cloak clasp, and it was kind of because I was reading The Phantom Stranger, like, you know what God could really use? God could really use a cloak clasp. So I got one. It was kind of cool.
There you go.
There you go. Comic book tie-in for Horror House. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, from comic books, I think it was around 73 is when I, about a year after getting into comic books, is when I discovered Famous Monsters of Filmland. Oh, fell in love with that.
Yeah.
And I used to buy, it was very adult, but Heavy Metal magazine.
Oh, yeah, they were.
But they were interesting, good science fiction tales. Some of them were way out there.
Yeah, I got those, and they were right on the edge. Yeah, they were right on the edge of being adult to the point, and I got them, I had them, and they were with my comic book collection. My parents never went in there and like, what are you reading there, son?
Do you remember the magazine-sized comics, Gar?
Yes, Conan. Comics? Yeah, there were Conan magazines. There were Hulk magazines. And they
were black and white back then, as I recall.
They were black and white, right.
I remember a really good series from Marvel called Tales of the Zombie. It was about some coffee baron dude, and he got murdered by this guy that was jealous because guy was lusting after his wife or something, or his girlfriend that was over, and the guy beat the hell out of him. So he got revenge, had him murdered, and had him zombified. And so he was like a good zombie, going around doing good deeds. He was almost like a superhero.
There was a guy named Brother Voodoo or something like that.
Brother Voodoo was good too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Morbius and, I have something called Marvel Vampire Tales Volume 3 right here. And it has Morbius, it has Brother Voodoo, and it has someone else in there too. No, I can't remember. Another thing that made it to that large size was The Tomb of Dracula.
Yeah. And they were slightly adult too. Some of those I remember there was a little bit of nudity in that Tales of the Zombie. And they didn't have to worry about the comics code because they were a magazine size, so they were technically a magazine.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was why Mad Magazine made its jump from comic book to magazine.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so you're going to censor us? I don't think so.
Tried to save what they could from EC Comics. That was the last survivor, Mad Magazine. Very sad.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's the most saddening to me is the fact that Mad Magazine is no longer an existing entity.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
So, I mean, we've lost so much. We lost Mad Magazine and so many other to the wayside.
Oh, yeah.
Going through my parents' house, I found a few of the old Cracked magazines I used to have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cracked was a little bit like, I think it was Marvel's version of Mad, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. They did
Marvel or some other publisher, like it was like trying to be a Mad spinoff, sort of, or a Mad, like a spoof of a spoof. Oh.
Wasn't there also a magazine called Eck, E-C-H-H-H or something?
Brand
like
Eck. Not Brand Eck.
Yeah. Brand Eck. Yeah.
Brand Eck was Marvel's way of referring to DC Comics. So they were not Brand Eck.
Wow.
Not Brand Eck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Not that they weren't digging at each other. My gosh.
No, but thank God they collaborated in the late 70s.
Did.
They made those big giant size Spider-Man versus Superman or whatever.
And Hulk versus Batman and X-Men versus I don't know who.
I don't know. Hulk
is a little
bit much to handle even for Batman. Come on.
Well, yeah, Batman has no powers. So, aside from jumping out of the way, I don't know what he was going to do.
And being a rich millionaire.
Hey, Hulk, let me pay you off. And he's like, I'm already green. I don't know.
Yes.
It's so weird. And I've tried to put my hand back into the comics as far as to stay current with all the different changes and everything. They're too weird for me now.
I can't.
They're not the comics I knew.
Well, I don't think the characters are relatable. Maybe it's just me and I'm being, I don't know.
Old? Yeah, we're being old.
We're being old. Stop
we're
being
old.
No, there's only one way to stop being old, and I'm not ready for that yet.
it
has
like
a permanency to it that does not appeal to me.
Right. Now, a lot of the stuff that I have for comic books is reprints from back when I was reading them. I'm looking at an Essentials Marvel Comics Daredevil number 2, and it's 500 pages, all black and white, a reprint from the 1970s or 60s.
That is how I really got to experience and appreciate EC Comics. Some company, and I forget who, did these wonderful I got a ton of them. Like, the Tales from the Crypts and the Witches stuff and some of the science fiction ones, too. They had a lot of science fiction comics EC did. They had Westerns, too, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, boatloads of Westerns. And Western ghost, because Westerns definitely lend towards ghost stories. So you have the ghost towns and ghost stories in the West and all that.
Yep.
In fact, this last the last thing that we listened no, not the last thing we listened to, but one before that, Suspense with the Hollywood Hostages. That was weird because the outlaw was playing like he was an old cowboy outlaw bandit, and yet they had cameras that if you take the picture, you pull it out, you wave it for like a minute, and it's not exactly the other ones where they had the little, and it would come out and, develops in your hand. This one, you had to let it sit there for a second and then pull it off. And
that was a little payola from Polaroid. I remember those.
Yeah. And all of this is gone. Like, good luck trying to find replacement flash tubes. Good luck trying to find replacement film if you have any. I remember Christmas. These cameras are relatively.
So many people are into retro stuff. I'll bet somebody somewhere does it. sells it or whatever.
Well, do you remember the flip flash where you would put it in, put the flash in there and go click, 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 and then pull it out and flip
the
it over and
flash,
put it in.
The flash cube.
Yeah, that too. And it would rotate. Yeah, that one. And cameras, even the Instamatics in the early 70s were inexpensive enough that on a Christmas day, you might get one and go, oh, wow, look, I've got a camera.
That flash cube could be deadly to the eyeballs, man. I mean, they would steer you blind for a minute.
And then, the Instamatics, they came in with a built-in flash that would just, it didn't die after one. It would keep going. It's just crazy, all of the changes that we've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
A lot of them.
And then it owes back to me getting a cloak class from the 1800s or something.
Cloak class.
A cloak class. Yeah, it's a chain and two pendants. And one pendant on either shoulder. They hook onto your cloak. And then you can switch all around and your cloak stays connected.
And
without it twisting all over the place. So, yeah. And again, it's a direct nod out of this Phantom Stranger guy. And I was just, like, blown away that I just got the action figure. I was like, oh, I got a Phantom Stranger action figure. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking
Marvel...
here. On...
Go ahead.
I was just saying, I'm looking here on Etsy. And they have a bunch of the old flash bulbs and some flash cubes. And
no kidding.
They're unbelievable.
I mean, the cheapest
thing I'm finding is a 2 box for $12.60, you know. You know,
oh, wow.
Here's a 3 box. A lot of $68. And this has actually a nice collection of them. I don't know how many there actually are. It doesn't say.
Yeah.
But you'll
get
36, 9,
12, 15,
18. And then there's another 18. And those 36 different flash cubes.
Wow.
I remember those. It was just so crazy then.
For $68.
Yeah, it's kind of pricey.
Then you had to run and get your stuff processed too. Remember that? You had to drop off.
Right.
It used to be like a cartridge, and then like in some it was a roll, a little roll.
Remember
when you
drive by
places
that were in the grocery store, and you drive by and drop it off the photo mats or whatever they were called?
Is that or the photo mats? Yeah, they were the independent little huts there outside that people could drive
by,
drop them in, and come back.
I got a bunch of antique movie cameras. I still have the cameras I animated with as a kid, and they're wind-up, so they're, like, good forever, as long as the springs don't screw up inside. And they have a single-frame capacity, which is why I bought them, so I could do animation with clay and with drawings and things like that.
Cool.
But you used to have to wind it like in the dark so that you didn't spoil the end of the film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get more good film.
Right.
And you shot it on the old cameras. It was actually 16mm film. You would shoot it, and then when the roll got used up, you'd flip it around and you could shoot it again. It was like 3 minutes on one side, 3 minutes on the other, roughly. And what they would do when they process it was they would split it and then splice them together. And, you know, a week later you come back and your movie's ready.
I so wish that there's no way I could ever find them or they're gone, for me anyway. But it would be so awesome to have the old home movies that were on 16mm or whatever they were.
Usually most of those were
8mm,
yeah.
8mm, yeah, something like that, and you could play them back on like some type of a brownie projector or something.
Well, my son bought me this device that I have to make more use of when I make some time. That takes your old 8mm films and makes them digital. You know,
I've seen that. I just didn't have the. I don't have enough 8mm to transfer that way.
My wife has a ton of family photos, but I have a lot of the stuff where I animated chess sets and kids scooting around on their butts, like the Gulf No-Knox commercials, like, you know,
yes.
Invisible
Love
car
them.
Thing. And just a few where I tried mats to put the clay dinosaurs with people. That didn't work as well as my later stuff on Super 8 using a rear projection screen. That was cool.
Yeah.
That came out pretty cool.
I have some family stuff, too, but I can actually take that down to the Akron Public Library, and they can they have a machine like the one that you have, Dale, and they can
mm-hmm.
put it on to just into a video file.
Yeah, I did a couple rolls for the wife to so she can go down memory lane, and there's, like, rolls and rolls of hers. But I've got a few. I would almost like to take some of my Castle films. Remember Castle films, Gar?
Yeah, yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
I
yes.
still have a bunch of them. I've got Bride of Frankenstein. I've got, I think, Creature from the Black Lagoon. And if you remember, they had the big 200-foot ones were like about 15 to 20 minutes of the movie. And then they had little reels that were like about 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, five to 8 minutes, something like that, yeah.
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 And I got, I got Seventh Voyage of Sinbad in color. Ooh. The big reel of that one. What else did I have? I think I had Teenage Werewolf, maybe.
Teenage Werewolf, yeah. And with the advances that are now available in video editing, you could take one of these older films and
mm-hmm.
add different little nuances to it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you got enough money, you can do anything on film or video, rather.
Yeah, true.
Yep. Look at the fun we get to have with our little toys.
It's true.
Green screen.
It's true.
Oh yeah, or taking existing film and then masking out part of it and adding details that weren't there before.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing what can be done.
Just like that amazing stuff you get done for you with Spaceship One and stuff, Dave, and the singing Frankenstein.
Oh, I know, and well, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Jim's working on it. We talked this week. And he says, well, you know, Dave, I always go overboard. I said, yes, I know that, Jim. So he's already created Drax Comedy Castle. And
oh,
he has
God.
Neon signs that are flashing and all kinds of things. I cannot wait to see what he does with the Frankenstein stand-up. Frankie stand-up,
oh,
yeah.
That is going to be so cool.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you actually bring on different characters, Dave, he could be like an MC for his Comedy Castle.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, I don't know if your guy wants to create more characters, but you could have whatever.
Yeah, we'll see how this comes out when we see what he. This is his idea because he heard one of our bits where we one of our songs. Maybe it was Monstrous Holiday. He heard us do.
Yeah.
And he asked if I did all of us. I said no. It was I was just the Carlisle
the
voice.
He and says, the writer.
And he said, oh, man, he just off the top of his head, you know, you really ought to, like, write this stand-up, like a Frankenstein monster did stand-up comedy. And
great.
I said, yeah, okay, that sounds interesting, Jim. And then, like, a week later, he sent me that working Frankenstein model I sent you, Dale.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, crap, now I have to write this thing.
He got pigeonholed into it. That's good,
I did.
Though.
And you know what? We're good at pushing each other on things because then he sees something and he can make more fun with it than even I did. He turns something that's okay and turns it into an amazing thing. I'm so looking forward to seeing this thing.
Yep.
I think it's going to be awesome. You gave me a snippet of it, and I was like, oh, wow, that is great.
Yeah.
Well, I think the giant collie feels the need to decorate outside or chase some invisible animals or something.
All right, guys.
And hopefully he'll leave me alone for the rest of the night. Because I've been up since 2 o'clock a.m.
You're insane. You're insane.
Yeah.
So. So Gar already said the magic words. Let's let Jimmy in.
Let's let him out.
Good night. Good night. Yeah. 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 It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arriboo, what we say, and inka-tinka-doo.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Do you mind turning off the radio?